Okay, we're picking up for the Gemara Vav Amud Aleph. We have four lines from the top of Rabbi Yehuda Omer. So we're discussing the last point of the Braisa, which says Ad sheyesham zaken utamin, that the field is going to be presumed that it has a grave there, unless there was an elder person or a Talmud Chacham, was a young Talmud Chacham, who can tell us that it was something which was plowed over. So Gemara says Lafishin Kol Mekim Adavar, because not everyone was an expert in this matter. So the Gemara just points out on Rabbi Yishmamina. We learn from here Tzur Mid Rabbanan Deikub Hamashef. There's a young Talmud Chacham in the city called Mila Demasa Alei Remad. He has to all the city's matters need to be comment upon him, that at the end of the day, because he's knowledgeable in all matters, he needs to pay attention to what's going on. The Ritva points out that he has to know how the situation was, if there was the trees there, not trees there. He has to just pay attention to every single thing that's going on in the city. We assume that there was plowed over. He has to be the one to take charge and tell us what the situation was. And we see that's a very important job of the Rav, not just his shul, what's going on in the shul, but the whole city, all the things that are going on, those are his responsibility to take care of them as much as possible. I'm going to review them. Matza Evan Mitzianis. If someone found a single stone that's marked with lime, that indicates the Techtea Tameh, that the area directly beneath the stone is going to become Tameh, and not necessarily the area further than that. However, Shtayim, if you have two stones in area which is going to then be seemingly if there is lime between the stones, Binam Tame, then we can assume that the area between them is going to become Tameh, because Rashi explains the lime is presumably poured between the stones as a marker that there's constantly going to be a Tameh Meis situation under that whole area. But if there's no lime between the stones, Binam Tar, that the area between them is judged is going to be Tahar. So the Gemara, that was the halacha. Now the Gemara Sakasha, the Alpha Gabdalika Chorish, really, does this mean that even though there was no plowing that was been done between the stones, it's still going to become Tahor if there's no lime? That Tanya, the Braisa seems to contradict this. Another Braisa tells us that if you're Matza Evan Echas Matzian, if you find one single marked stone, Tachtea Tame, that's the same halacha. However, if you have two, this price is going to make us a distinction. Shtayim, if you find two marked stones, then im yesh choresh b'neihem, if there is an indication of plowing that's between them, b'neihem tar, then the area between them is going to be tar. If im lav, b'neihem tameh, but if not, the area between them is going to become tameh. What do we see? That even if there is no line between the stones, the area is going to become tameh unless proven otherwise. Is it a tar unless proven otherwise, or tameh? Here, we're assuming that it's tameh unless proven otherwise. And even if there is no lime, the presumption is that the stones are going to be two ends of a grave, and therefore between them is going to become a gravesite and an area which you have to assume is tameh. So Gemara says, Omar HaPapa, the Gemara answers now. Hacha, what are we discussing in the Braisa? We're talking about Kshasid Shafuch al Rashe Madura Lakarim Lakam, where the lime is poured in between the top of the stones and spread from here to there between the area. Then we're assuming that area can become tameh. However, and therefore, if there is an area that showed that it was plowed between them, between the stones, then b'neim tar, the area between them is going to be tahor. The emar machmas choresh the iklaf. That because we're assuming it's understandable to assume that due to the plowing, the lime was peeled from the stones, therefore it became stuck to the ground. But if there is no area that has been plowed, we can assume cedar divinei b'nei uvehu v'tameh, that the lime between them, the area that the line must belong between the stones, and therefore the area is going to become tameh. However, there's no line between the stones, it's obvious the area is going to be tar, even if it has not been plowed, and therefore there's not going to be a kasha on Rav Yehuda. Now the Gemara continues, Amar Rabbi Asi. Rabbi Asi tells us now, Meitzer Echad Mitzion, if one boundary of the area was marked for Tuma, Hu Tameh V'chola Sedekula Tahor, that area is going to become tameh. However, the rest of the field is going to become Tahor. In the times of the Gemara, they used to have fields that were separated by these type of boundaries, which were higher and lower than the fields themselves. Rav Asi is talking about a case where you have an elevated boundary on one side of the field, and it's covered with lime. Since only one side of the field is marked, that seems to imply that the Tumah is only in that area. And therefore, the elevated boundary is going to be visible from a far point, then that's going to indicate the ground beneath it is going to become Tameh. However, if you have Shnayim, if you have two boundary markings, Heim Tameh V'chola Sedekola Tohor, then that area is going to become Tameh, of the rest of the area is going to become Tahor. Shlosha, what if you have three areas of markings? Heim Tameh V'chola Sedekola Tohora, those areas are going to become Tameh, the rest of the field still going to become Tahor. However, once you have Arba, if you have four boundaries, then Heim Tameh V'chola Sedekola Tameh, then that area is going to become Tahor, and the field around it is going to become Tameh, because we can assume But that boundary strip is indicating that that whole area is meant to designate the whole area as place, which is Tumah, and therefore we're going to assume that whole area now becomes Tumah when you have four boundary markings. The Amar Mar, as we learned above, Ein Marchikin Tzion Mimukom Tumah. We do not distance the marker from the location of the Tumah, Shalav Sivet Tzisrael. So that's coming to explain why when all three boundaries are there, the entire field has become Tumah, because we're assuming that we're not supposed to definitely assume that when you have one, two, three, but when you have four, it's clearly the marking of the inner edge is become Tumah, so that the whole area inside of it, we can assume, therefore, without a doubt, that that is a problem, and that's going to become tamid. The yotzin af ala klayim, the shlichim, the agents of the beis din, they go out to inspect for klayim, as we point out from Tosfos, that's when it's recognizable that those things are going to be become tam, become klayim. Klayim again is the mixture of usher. fruits and vegetables together. You're not allowed to make them. You're not allowed to plant them together. That's the Isra of Kalayim. So the Gemara says about Kalayim b'Chol HaMoed Nafkinan. Do they go out for going to inspect on Chol HaMoed and Pesach and not Chol HaMoed Pesach and not any earlier? Ramina, but we have a Mishnah. The Mishnah tells us seemingly different. This Mishnah is a Mishnah in Shkalim, and it says Be'achad Ba'Adar Mashmin Al Shkalim Ve'Al Kalayim. On the first day of Adar, they go. Regards to Shkalim, they go with regards to Klayim, and they warn them. Chamisha Esar Bakornis Megillah Bakrachim, the 15th day. That's Shushan Purim. So then they read the Megillah in areas of the cities which are surrounded by a wall from Yeshua Ben Nun. The Yotzin LeKaveitz Esar Drachim LeSakin Erechovos, and they go clear out the thorns of the roads and they repair the streets. They measure the mikvahs to make sure that they have the 40 sar requirement of water. To make sure that the people are toveling them are going to become tar, the kelim toveling them are going to be tar. Those that kot zecharam, they tend to all the needs of the public, and they mark the graves, yotin al klaim, and they go out for klaim and uproot it. This seems to indicate that we're going out on the 15th of Adar, which is an entire month before the Zman of Pesach. So what's going on over here? Rashi also just points out why the Gemara is only bothered by this kasha. L'chora, this seems to contradict numerous points in the Mishnah and Shkalim. Our Mishnah teaches us the roads were also, and the mikvahs were also measured on Chol HaMoed. The Mishnah tells us they were done also by the Chamisha Asar Ba'Adar. So how is it that we don't ask that kasha? So Rashi wants to answer that at the end of the day, even if they were done on Chamisha Asar Ba'Adar, you could have rain coming in or the opposite sun ruining the mikvahs, so they would double check the mikvahs and they would repave the streets. Those were being done on Chol HaMoed if they were necessary. However, with this point about the Kalayim, this seemingly is a real stira because you can't ask one or the other. When did they go? They didn't go twice. They would go one. Well, the Gemara is going to potentially answer that, but this is more of a stira. That's why the Gemara is bothered by this point and not the other points of that Mishnah. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Chanina, Chad Amar, one says that we're dealing with Kan Bebachir, Kan Ba'afil. The Mishnah is dealing with the case of the early crops, whereas here it's dealing with the later crops. The ones that are going out on the 50th of Adar, they are going to the early crops. And the Chol HaMoed Pesach, they're going out for the late crops. And the V'chad Amar, another one answered, Kan Bizroim, Kan Berakos. No, the Mishnah is dealing with the case of grains, whereas over here we're dealing with the case of vegetables. Grains are planted early enough in the winter, and they are able to be checked during Adar, whereas vegetables, those are going to be later, and those you check on Chol HaMoed Pesach. So it depends what we're discussing in Echanami, it would depend on the situation. Now the Gemara continues, Amar Abasi, Amar B'Yochadan, Lo Shanu Ela She'en Nitza Nikar. That the only, that this halacha that they would go out from the 15th of Adar and Chol HaMoed is only with regards to when their sprouts are not recognizable before these dates. Not like a set in stone date. Aval, Nitza Nikar Yotzin Aleha. But if their sprouts are recognizable even earlier, they would go out immediately and take care of that situation as well. And they would go out and they would establish that they would get rid of them at that point as well. The Gemara says, "Ma'ishna b'chol ha'moed shalmoed d'nafkina." Why? What's special about Chol HaMoed that they would go out and search for klayim? Why don't they go either a few days before or a few days after? Why dafkan Chol HaMoed? So the Gemara answers now, "Amar Yaakov, Amar Yochadan, Mishum schar pula de'mazle gaban." Because that who is going to go out? People who are working people, so that if they're usually off on Chol HaMoed and you hire them, you're going to get a much cheaper rate. And since you're hiring them, that's going to be okay. So this is a very big issue over here. When the world is going out, that people are off, so you're going to hire them. But we pointed out earlier, how is it permitted to hire people to work on Chol HaMoed when we assumed before, that we quoted before, that a person is not allowed to hire himself for work? So Tosfos quote, one answer, maybe we're going like that man Damar in the Gemara later on Yod Gimel. The Gemara tells us that someone who has no money or food is allowed to hire himself out and work on Chol HaMoed. Maybe those are the people that they are that they're discussing. Tosfos give another answer, that the Rabbanan gave a special heter, which is a Torah mitzvah, for uprooting klayim, that you'd be able to hire whoever you want. And this would indicate that even if a person has a lot of money, if you're doing it for Torah mitzvah, then Beis Din has the right to hire you, which would then potentially lead to a major heter, where it's a Torah of Torchei mitzvah, potentially, to be able to be hired out to do something as a need for someone, and even to get your regular wages in Chol HaMoed might be potentially be a heter. I'm not passing, just mentioning that this Tosos is very important, Halacha L'maisa, because it could give us some major heterim if we go like this answer, which I think the poskim do bring down. The Achronim do bring this down. The Halachas on Shulchan Aruch, they do quote this answer, but again, how to apply it and things like that. Obviously, every situation is different, but that definitely could lead to some heterim of people who do things which are Torch mitzvah Chol HaMoed, potentially to hire themselves out. And to do things at work on a certain situation where there's a public need and things like that. Again, these are very controversial. Not controversial. You need to ask a rav and be a mishar. If a guy is doing some things that's not at all necessary, and he claims that that's necessary, that's obviously not a torah of the mitzvah, torah of Chol HaMoed. Okay, so that is potential heter over here of when the need is. So we see that they're hiring. So the Marma now points out from this point also another thing we can point out from here. Amar Zirvei Timur of Mashar Shiash Mamina Ki Avina Lu Schar, that when they give their wages, when the basin is hiring them, Mitshuma Salishka Yavina Luhu, they must be doing it from the funds of the Beis HaMikdash, the treasury of the Beis HaMikdash, because if it wasn't that point, because that we are going to force the people who are violating the climb, that we make them pay the violators of the climb, they're the ones who have to pay the workers who are inspecting their fields. What do we care if it's during the time of Chol HaMoed or not? Let them pay more higher wages. They're the ones violating the climb. We don't care. Let them pay instead of $10 an hour, they're going to be $35 an hour. What do I care? They're the people who are violating the climb. It doesn't make a difference to us. Therefore, it must be whatever they're requesting, they should be given to them, because who cares how much you're being paid for them? LMI, the fact that we care so much about the cost is because we're trying to save it from the fact of the Lishka, the Chumas Lishka of the Beis HaMikdash, and those are public funds. So therefore, in order to save public funds, we are allowed to make it that it's going to be, in fact, earlier, it's going to be, in fact, on Chol HaMoed, and that's the point of the public funds. Now the Gemara points out, Vad Kama. So up until what now is it going to be considered Kalayim? What does it mean up until what? Rashi says that when it comes to Kalayim, it's not usual for a small amount of seeds to be mixed with the species of one plant. When that comes accidentally, the small amounts are going to be patel, and the planting does not consider it a violation of kalayim. So the Gemara is wondering over here, in a case where they find kalayim in a field, what's the measure which they require to uproot it, and the amount they're allowed to leave in place, because it would be batel, and it wouldn't be necessarily an issue of kalayim. So the Gemara says, Amar Shmuel bar Yitzchak, ki osa shishinir, that which we learn in the Mishnah, kolsa shiyesh ba, turning on to the next number now. Rove zera mimin acher, quarter of a cob of a different type of species mixed within it. One must reduce the amount of the mixture to less than a quarter of a cob. A quarter of a cob is 1/24 of a sa. So that's there are 6 cob in a sa. That's a Rashi point of 1/24 of the sa. That's it. You'd have to lower it to that amount. And that's the amount that you'd have to do it to. So where's about time to wait? We learned on the Brisa though, Hiskino Shiyam Afkirin Kol HaSadeh Kula, that the Chachamim instituted that it should be, they should come, and when they discover the Kalayim, they should declare that the produce of the entire field be ownerless. What does this mean? That they penalize the owner, that the field should not, the field for not uprooting the Kalayim himself upon hearing Basin's announcement of the first other. They're declaring his produce ownerless. The Chazanish points out, not the field, just the produce is ownerless. So what do we see? That at the end of the day, when it's growth, it's all confiscated, and that lechora should be everything. So the Gemara says, what's the answer? Lokasha, come kodem takana. Here, when we're talking about, that was before the takana, prior to the takana, that they would declare all the produce of the field ownerless. Kan lacha takana, whereas the Braisa, which we're quoting, that's referring to after the takana. The sound that we learn in a Braisa explicitly, Breishonayo, Okrein, Umash, Lechlefen, Behemtan. Originally, the Shliach of Basin, what would they do? They would uproot all the climb, and they would throw it before the animals as animal food. So the people who violate the halachas, they'd be happy twice over, twofold. Why? One is that the inspectors take out the weeded out their fields for them. That was the thing that they would have to take care of themselves. So they were like double happy. They're giving food for their animals. This is great. So we want to help Bali Avera. We don't want to have your Avera be beneficial to you. So therefore, the Chum instituted that the inspectors should uproot the kalayim and throw it on the roads. By Dinah Smech and Sukhagdol, but still people were happy. Because they were doing one fold over. They were weeding out the fields for them. So therefore the Chamim instituted that the inspector should declare that the produce in the entire field should be ownerless, and that's what should happen. And that's what the Gemara is pointing out, that this is after the Takana. Very good. So now we're up to the next Mishnah. The Mishnah is continuing the discussion of watering crops on Chol HaMoed. Reb Lezer ben Yaakov Eimer, Moishchein es Amayim Ne'ilan Le'ilan. You're allowed to divert water from one tree to another during Chol HaMoed. Here we're talking about a case of a tree which had a certain amount of water just was gathered together there over there. You're allowed to divert that water to another area where it is needed. So trees are similar to the crops that they grow in an irrigated field. It's a danger and considered a major loss. Then it would be mutter. You're not allowed to do this to the entire field. Because we're discussing of a field of a base of baal, a tree which is growing in rainwater field, the trees need to be irrigated. But the grains growing on there can survive without the rainfall alone. So therefore, the Mishnah is teaching us that although under each area needs to be watered, the entire area in between them should not be, and therefore it should not be doing it for the entire field. So that's the din of the Mishnah. If you have plants which are not watered regularly before the Chag, you're not allowed to water them on Chol HaMoed, because you don't do them anyway on a regular basis, then obviously there's going to be no harm to them on Chol HaMoed if you don't take care of them. The Chachamim say that in both instances it's going to be mutter. They water the entire field and they permit watering the plants that were not watered regularly before Yom Tov. These Chachamim Lechora are Rabbi Meir. That's Rabbi Meir who learned Adav Beis and Manalef, that he holds that even if you have a rainwater field, you may be watered on Chol HaMoed for the purpose of enhancing its growth. That Lechora is the Chachamim in our Mishnah right now. Now the Gemara qualifies Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov's ruling. Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Sade Metunenes Mutar. If the field has been naturally moist, then it's going to be permitted to water it. Why? Because Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov told us in the first halacha that someone is not allowed to water a rainwater field because of the trees. Rabbi Yehuda is telling us that there's an exception to that when it was originally moist. The fact that it was originally moist and then dried up, that would lead to a major loss, a loss which cannot be repaired after Chol HaMoed, and therefore it would be mutter. So the Gemara says that we have a proof for this in the Braisa. The Braisa says, Tanina mihachu, we learn in Braisa, Kshamra Asher Lashkos Mamoed, when they said it's Asher to water on Chol HaMoed, Lo Yamru Ela Bezroim Shiloshasu Milifnei HaMoed. They said this only with regards to plants that were not watered before the Chag. Aval Zroim Shishasu Lifnei HaMoed, but plants that were watered before the Chag, Mutter Lashkos Mamoed, then it's going to be mutter to water them on Chol HaMoed. The Maisa said it, however, on the field which is naturally moist, still, then it's going to be mitzvah to water it on Chol HaMoed, and that's the raya that we're bringing right now. That must be the help and support for Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. Vein mashkit sada grid b'moed. We may not water a naturally dried field on Chol HaMoed, dry area, dried field on Chol HaMoed. V'chachamim matirin v'zeh v'zeh. However, the Chachamim say that it's permitted in both circumstances to do that. The Chachamim permit watering of a naturally dried field as well as an ordinary field that is not watered regularly before the Chol HaMoed. This is going to be machlokes over here. So the Gemara says in another halacha from the Braisa, Amar Ravina, Shma Mina, we learn another halacha that Hai Tarbitza, if you have this patch in a garden, Shari La Tarbutze Bechol HaMoed, permitted to sprinkle it with water on Chol HaMoed. So the Gemara says, Sada Greed Mai Taima, what's the reasoning of a dry field? What's the reasoning that one irrigates it according to Chamim and it does not rely on the rainfall alone? Da'afla Mashri Lecharfa, because the irrigation is going to help continue the growth and make the crops that are coming into make the mashvile acharfa, that the later crops are not going to become even earlier and be grown, but not because the crops are in danger of being ruined. The Chachamim therefore permit the irrigation on Chol HaMoed. Hachanami afile mashvile acharfa, here too in the case of the garden patch, the sprinkling is going to make the later crops into earlier crops, and it's also going to be mutter. Now the Gemara quotes a brisa, Tana Rabbanu Lerner brisa, Rabbitzin stay lavan b'shvias. You're allowed to sprinkle a grain field of water with water on Shemitah v'lo moed and not on Chol HaMoed. This is talking about a rainwater field. The Braisa is telling us that it's permitted during Shemitah because the watering the crops during Shemitah is going not be Asr Midaraisa, so therefore it's not going to be Asr unless it's if it's going to cause it's going to be a major loss. So that's going to be mutter. That's the old Shaila and Hilchos Shemitah Bizman Hazeh, is what is considered that you're only doing it for the purpose of not destroying your field as opposed to doing it for the purpose of increasing the field this year. That's a very big Shaila, and how to do the Halacha Maisa in Eretz Yisrael is a very big question. Either way, V'atani will learn in Braisa Marbitzin Bimod Melchashvias. You're allowed to sprinkle a grain field with water both the and during the Shemitah. No, there's no stira. How Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov goes to the Braisa, which saying that it's Aser, that's going to be the opinion of Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. And the opinion that says the Mutter HaRabbanan must be the opinion of the Rabbanan. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, who said that the Mishnah, it's Aser to water the field on the fact of some trees, he's going to say it's even Aser to sprinkle a field, as we learned in the first Braisa. The Rabbanan of the Mishnah is going to say that it's Mutter to do the entire field, and obviously they'd permit just the latter point of the Braisa to do even less than that. Tana Ida, we can learn another of the Braisa. Marbitzin Sade Lavan Erev Shvias. You're allowed to sprinkle a grain field with water on Erev Shemitah, in order that the vegetables should grow during the years of Shemitah. So that's what they used to do. So that would be mutter. Oh, not only that, rather, Ela Shemarbitz, instead, Lavan B'Shvias, you're allowed to even sprinkle a grain field with water during Shemitah, Kedeshiyatzi Rakos, Lamotzi Shvias, so that the vegetables should sprout after the conclusion of Shemitah. However, and not allowed to sprinkle the field during the Shemitah, the person making sprout during the Shemitah. That would be Usher. That's what Rashi points out over here. So now, that's what we learn from there. Now we're up to the next Mishnah. The next Mishnah is going to talk about more halachas of instances which Chol Moed things are going to be mutter. Sudden is ha'ishus v'achbarim. You're allowed to trap an ishus, and where it says what type of animal. This is an amais, misdea ilan, misdea lavan, from the grain field, kidarko in the usual manner, b'moed uvashvi, is both in Chol Moed and during the Shemitah. So the question of the Rishonim is over here, why in the world would I think that you're not allowed to do this on Shemitah of trapping animals that are ruining your field, the mice and things like that? Why would I have a havamina that it's usher? So Rashi over here says that maybe the trapping is really considered a problem of the havamina. We're in the havamina again. What was the thought that this would be usher? Obviously, the Mishnah says it's mutter. But what would be the havamina? Rashi explains that the trapping them might have thought is going to be improving the field, and therefore it's going to be considered which is beneficial to the field itself, which might be usher on Shemitah. Tosus says a little bit differently. Tosus think that's not even enough. Tosus assume that the fact that you actually have to clear the field of stones, which is normally usher to do on the Shemitah Yeres, the Mishnah on Shemitah Talos, that's what I'm allowed to even remove the stones for the purpose of trapping and getting rid of the mice. So Tosus is a much bigger chiddush on the halacha of what would happen according to this Mishnah. From a normal tree with fruits going on the tree, that's going to be done in the usual manner. With a grain field, then you trap them only in an unusual manner because they don't damage the grain field as much, and it's not significant, so therefore you must do it with a shinoi, with a way of doing it in an unusual fashion. And the Mishnah continues, umakrinus appears to b'moed, you're allowed to close a breach of a fence during Chol HaMoed, because we're assuming that, again, that would lead to major damage if the animals go through it. Vashvias bona kedarko l'shmita, you're allowed to build them even in a usual manner, that even though it looks like one is building a wall in order to guard it from his fruits, still, that's going to be mutter during Shemitah. The Gemara asks, now, my issues, what is this issues animal they're discussing over here that we mentioned? Again, sadin is ha'ishus achbarim, you're allowed to trap an issues in achbarim, what is this? The Gemara says, I'm Rav Yehuda, Birya Shein La'inayim, it's a type of animal which has no eyes. What is this case? So the Tosas quote actually the Yerushalmi, which defines issues as a mole. And the fact that the mole has tiny little eyes which are covered by skin, it looks like it has no eyes, and that's why it's called an issues. That's why the Gemara says Birya Shein La'inayim, that it doesn't have any eyes. Amar Rava Bar Shmel V'Timer of Yemar Bar Shelemya. My Kra, what is the pasuk which teaching us that Ishus is unable to see? Kimo Shablul Tamas Yaloch Nefel Ishus Balchazu Shamish, like a snail that melts and is like withering away, the falling of an Ishus that has never saw the sun. Ishus is something that never sees the sun. It sounds like Ishus is something that's like blind, doesn't really have any eyes, can't really see. That's this Ishus we're discussing over here, a type of mole. Tanar Rabban Lerner Raisa. Tzadin is a Ishus V'Sachbar Mr. Elavan Mr. Ilan Kidarko. You're allowed to trap an Ishus and the mice in the grain field from a normal fruit growing field in a normal way. Machriven chori nemalim, and you're allowed to destroy ant holes in Chol HaMoed. Ketzer machriven, how do you destroy ant holes? Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel loymer, my vi is offer mechor zeh v'nosin lechor zeh v'hein chonkin zeh zeh. You take dirt from this end and holes on the other end, and the ants are going to come to kill each other. How does this happen? Rashi explains that the ant smells this soil that's not what used to. They're going to come to panic and kill each other. They're in a different area. I'm Rav Yemer Bar Shlomo giving advice how to figure out how to trap ants. I'm Rav Yemer Bar Shlomo Shmeida Baye Vehu Dekai Basrei Avdei Nahara. This is only going to be helpful when the two holes are located on the two sides of the river. Vehu Deleika Geshara, and also when they are when there is no bridge that across the river. Vehu Deleika Gamla, and when there's no plank laid across it. All those cases of Deleika Matzra, and when there's no rope stretched to it. All these examples are things that are going to limit it. By if any of these happen, the ants will recognize the dirt, and they're not going to come to. It's not going to be effective in trapping them. So Gemara says ad kama. So until what distance are the ant holes considered too close together? So when there is a river between the two holes, then and there's no way of crossing, how far important the holes must be that the animal to recognize the soil from one another, in which case it's going to be something which will be effective. So how far is that? So the Gemara defines it as ad parsa, until a parsa. Parsa is 4 mil, which is 8,000 amos. That amount is going to be up until that point is marchikin. Past that point, if you don't have a parsa, Rashi says alpha gav. They're going to understand that it's not considered a foreign soil. It's not going to be something which would be effective. So it has to be more than that amount in order for this method to work. Okay, Be'ez Hashem will pick up with Rabbi Yehuda in tomorrow's daf.